We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is currently not here, but maybe. We'll see what happens. He's a fan of this one. We'll see if he joins on later on. But Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I normally discuss new movies weekly. However, every now and then, like to have these special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentary tracks, or still a little different. And this is our commentary track for the month of April 2025. And this month we are talking Rumble in the Bronx in honor of, fittingly, its 30th anniversary. We're talking about Jackie Chan and Rumble in the Bronx. And doing that with me, we have host of the Brandon Peters Show. He kicked and punched his way here. It's Brandon Peters.
Hello. I don't have anything clever here other than, I don't know, nothing.
Also joining us this week, we have from Movies, Films, and Flicks and Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. He rode a hovercraft to be here. It's Mark Hoffmeyer.
I'm actually underneath the hovercraft right now, just going really method for this. And now you can't leave.
You know, you're lucky. My mind on cleverness was floating to saying toward saying something about a hovercraft, but then that would have just pulled the rug out.
I would have pivoted to a Bronx Tale and just talked about the biker gangster fight.
There you go.
Yeah. Lastly, joining us from the outside scoop, his game gear never comes with batteries. It's Scott, the ice cream man, Mendelsohn.
That feels slightly disparaging, but I'll allow it.
How are all of you doing tonight?
This is great.
This is an awesome way to spend a Monday.
Feeling as well as if I got belted with a half a dozen glass bottles.
Enough about your comment section. Let's talk about Jackie Chan.
Never read the comments.
This is going to be fun. I've been excited for a good week to talk about this movie with you guys, because this should be a lot of fun. We're talking Rumble in the Bronx. All of us currently, what we're doing is we're going to talk over the movie as commentaries go. We all currently have the film paused 5 seconds in, so you plan to follow along. Start up the movie, pause it 5 seconds in. That's where the New Line logo is kind of starting to form. And then eventually I'm going to count down from 3, 2, 1. And on the sound of go, we're just going to all press play and start talking over the film Rumble in the Bronx. If you plan to listen just to listen, then you're good. You just get to keep doing your thing. Which is a joyous talking about the film Rumble in the Bronx. I love saying this title, Rumble in the Bronx. It's a very fun title to say. It rolls off the tongue. So I'm going to say it a lot as we go through this film. But are you guys ready?
I guess like a Bronx Tale. That sounds great.
Rumble Bronx in the Bronx. Bronx in general is a good yeah, word.
The Bronx Bomber.
Mm-hmm. It's the Bronx Bomber, yes. All right, you guys ready?
Rumble's a pretty fun word in
Rumble.
Context.
Rumble is a fun. It's better than fight.
I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Rumble at the Holocaust Museum might be a little icky, but otherwise you're good to go.
If there was a news report that said, Rapscallion has got up to no good tonight as there was a rumble in the Holocaust Museum, you'd be like, I mean, that's not the best place to do that, but I am intrigued by this story.
They went for the word rumble. There's a neat angle here.
I kind of want to watch Rapscallions in the Bronx. Now
that's a musical I'm writing with Lynn.
Get away from here, you rapscallions. Stop graffitiing my store.
I just call him Lynn.
I was thinking of a Tom Hardy streaming show from the Gareth Evans or whatever. I don't know.
Taboo.
Does that make any sense? Yeah, okay, whatever.
Well, he has a movie called Havoc coming up, but then there's also the Guy Ritchie show that he's currently on.
So there's rapscallions in that one?
There's rapscallions in all of these ones. Don't fret.
I love a good rapscallion.
Even Helen Mirren. She's probably the most rapscallion of them all in that show.
No one's ever called me that.
We ready now?
Paramount Plus is Helen Mirren.
Paramount Plus, yeah. She's on the payroll.
Taylor Sheridan needs to make a Paramount Plus show called Rapscallion.
I'm sure by default he eventually will.
It's about a hip-hop artist / cook.
In Texas.
It's a rapscallion.
Oil fields. Scally, oh no.
Raid by Brendan Thwaites.
Alright, let's actually start now. I'm going to count down. 3, 2, 1, rumble.
Let's rumble!
Let's get ready to rumble.
Alright, Jackie Chan. 1995, this movie comes out in Hong Kong, China, and Taiwan, the first time a film has ever been released in all three territories at once. But a year later, at Sundance, this film premieres in America, of all places. This must have been super, you know, I imagine if you're watching films at Sundance in 1996, and you're like, okay, Billy Bob Thornton's trying to break into the industry again. Let's see what this goes. And then you're like, oh, like, there's something fun to watch finally. And it's Rumble in the Bronx. That must be it, right? Isn't Sling Blade's 96? Isn't that yeah, probably like when that debuts?
Precisely.
There's got to be some person that watched Sling Blade is like, oh, that was depressing. Let me watch. And then they walk into Rumble in the Bronx, like, this is my new favorite movie. While I check on that, I want to hear from each of you.
The little indie darling at Thumbdance, Rumble in the Bronx.
Rumble in the Bronx. I want to hear from each of you while I look this up. When did you first see Rumble in the Bronx? Brandon, when did you first see Rumble in the Bronx?
So there's a chain of events that happens here. I rented Desperado, I think it was, on VHS, and they had a trailer for Rumble in the Bronx. And I'm like, who is Jackie Chan? I wasn't cool enough to know what Police Story was or anything like that. So I'm like, what is this? So then by nature, going to the video store, I see Rumble in the Bronx. And holy crap, this was amazing. This is like, it blew my mind. Also note, because it's the middle chain in this link here, Rumble in the Bronx then had trailers for Sonny Chiba's Street Fighter movies getting a VHS re-release. If you like Jackie Chan, you got to check out this guy that's not like Jackie Chan, but you might like it. So I discovered those through Rumble in the Bronx as well. But this is my introduction to Jackie Chan. And from here, you go to Super Cop, and then you start like digging back in the catalog while going forward with what we're getting in the United States, which in the, you know, once he breaks in the United States with this movie, finally, we start getting old shit delivered as new shit. That's like, it's a weird conundrum that happens. But this thing, I probably watched it like three times before I took it back. And I kept telling people about it. I was like, oh my God, you got to see this guy. This is nuts.
So, I just want to stop for a second to see, note that this is some of the few shots that actually take place in the Bronx, let alone New York City.
Yeah, but no one gives him shit about it, but they give Jason Voorhees a bunch of shit for filming in Vancouver.
Well, the film is actually, like, it's set in New York. That's the difference. Like, Jason doesn't really go to New York for a good long time. Again, I like that movie. But, like, it's not as if they just faked it. Like, they just weren't in the location for a long time. This movie is ostensibly set in New York, regardless of where they filmed. It'd be like complaining that they're not actually on Tatooine, they're in the volume somewhere. I mean, like, yeah, but it's set there.
Yeah.
All right. Scott, when did you first see Rumble in the Bronx?
I saw this on the Saturday of opening weekend in theaters. I took my uncle on a whim. I was staying with him for a weekend, my uncle and aunt, because my parents were off doing something, whatever. And he had even less knowledge of Jackie Chan than I did. So he sort of just took it on faith and had a grand old time with this picture. He didn't become like a diehard fan or anything, but he thought it was an absolute treat just because obviously this was not remotely in his wheelhouse. I had tangentially heard of Jackie Chan through like osmosis a few times here and there. Like, I was aware of like a Nintendo game called The Adventures of Jackie Chan. I was like, okay, I have no idea what that is. There was an MTV Movie Award ceremony in, I don't know, maybe 93, maybe 94, that gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Jackie Chan.
Tarantino.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah. Probably 94 then. So I was aware of who he was, but I'm not going to pretend that this wasn't my first real exposure to him, because it was. And, you know, I saw the previews. I thought this looks like a lot of fun. And I saw it and I had a good time with it. And then I you know, this led to several of his other films that you said be giving, you know, theatrical releases between 1996 and 2000-ish. And I saw most of them in theaters. And this was fun. What I thought was interesting about it, even more so now rewatching it, frankly, is that the tone is very unusual. And in retrospect, this was sort of my first exposure to quote unquote mainstream Asian cinema and the somewhat total imbalance that they sometimes strike. What was that?
There's no cartridge in the Game Gear.
Game Gear, and it's completely empty. But he's
has a game in it.
But he's gonna play it.
Poor kid in a wheelchair. You elite.
That's like the kid from Dumb and Dumber, where they give the bird to.
He's just pretending to play it to be polite.
He's really good at the noises. Then he's a real Michael Winslow.
I got the beeps. I got the creeps.
It is interesting that he got the MTV Movie Award. It's in 95. I see it now. It's a year before this movie like actually hits in America. So like once again, the MTV Movie Awards used to be cool and hip. They were like, well, let's tout Jackie Chan, someone that most of this audience has no real awareness of. That's a.
But also, didn't they give Lifetime Achievement Awards to Chewbacca and Clint Howard?
Their Best New Filmmaker Award was awesome for years. And a young kid living in Florida, I've learned about like Sofia Coppola, Guy Ritchie, Wes Anderson, John Singleton. Like they had Doug Liman for Swingers. Like they Spike Jonze. Like they had Nolan in 2002. Like
Wes
they had
Anderson
some great awards.
Like curated skits for the MTV Movie Award based on Rushmore. You're not wrong, Brandon. Yes, there was ones for like they had like sillier ones for like Chewbacca or whatnot. It's when they did the Clint Howard one, then they stopped it because it felt like too emotional to be like, this is actually a good award to give to Clint Howard. We were retiring. And then they brought it back like years later. But like they stopped after that because like this is actually nice. Like it's not just silly to give it to Chewbacca. It's like Clint Howard earned an award and he like felt good about it. And rightfully so. Clint Howard's a national treasure. America's third uncle. Right behind Tom Hanks and actual Ron Howard. Mark, when did you first see Rumble in the Bronx?
This is crazy. Like Brandon, I didn't rent Desperado. I rented National Lampoon's Senior Trip.
Get the fuck
and,
out. Here we go again.
Tarantino, 95, the best Lifetime Achievement Award. Tarantino put him on my radar. And then I saw that it was coming. I went and saw it in theaters. And then I went and watched all of his other stuff that was made before, then redubbed like Super Cop and all those other films. But yeah, I was in the theaters for this just because I never heard of Jackie Chan. No idea, you know, like I knew about Bruce Lee. I'd seen like Enter the Dragon, but that was probably as far as like, you know, martial arts films were concerned that I knew about. But yeah, when Tarantino did that thing on 95, Jackie Chan got on my radar and I went and saw the movie in 96 in the theater and I loved it.
Yeah, I had seen the trailer for this like a bunch of times between like VHS rentals and like whatever new like movies I had seen in theaters, and then it took until the movie was actually released on VHS for me to finally see it. And Brandon, similar to you, I watched it like multiple times before Return of the Tape, because that's what I often did when I was young and had videotapes on rental. I'd watch like the movie like three or four times if I liked it. Like I saw The Pest a lot of times on VHS because it's like 80 minutes and super silly for, you know, a 9-year-old to watch that movie. But yeah, so I watched Rumble in the Bronx a lot and was at that point, having just seen the trailers, like this is a thing. We can do this. This guy can just like throw himself around like a rag doll and do cool things. So I became not like obsessed, but I was certainly like I would treat every new like American release of a Jackie Chan film like an event.
Yeah.
You know? So like, you know, Super Cop would come out, I was like, I gotta go see it. First Strike came out, gotta go. And I'm like oblivious to the fact that these are like in the same series, right? It's just like, he's just Jackie, right? He's just a guy. He's just, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah. I had no idea Super Cop was the third movie.
Yeah.
or that First Strike was related to Super Cop.
Yeah. Because he's just Jackie, you know. He's just like, yeah, whatever. He throws it in an adventure, whatever.
Yeah, the guy was the franchise back in it. Like Stallone was the franchise, Schwarzenegger was the franchise, Van Damme was the franchise.
What Drunken Master came out like? Mm-hmm. I don't think it was direct to video, but like it did get a huge release by comparison in America. But regardless, I rented that one. It's like might be the best thing I've ever seen at that time when it came to like action, like fight based action movies. I think I told this story before. My mom went to see Good Will Hunting, and I chose to see Mr. Nice Guy instead, because I'm like, why do I want to see this movie about some math kid? I want to see the new Jackie Chan movie that's in theaters. So I saw Mr. Nice Guy, which is only 90 minutes. So then I watched like the last like 30 minutes of Good Will Hunting. I'm like, that seems like a good movie. Then I went into that eventually, and I watched like, this is a really good movie.
So, one day you're going to meet Matt Damon, and you're going to tell him what you chose.
I'm exactly. Oh, yeah. That's exactly.
And you're
going to
say, how you like them apples.
What helps is that so many people are in that movie, so I can tell that story to literally most of them if I ever read it to, like, Casey or of course, our best friend, Cole Hauser. That's the person. Yeah.
When you're visiting him in his native homeland of the Dominican Republic.
We should do a paparazzi commentary.
That's a movie that exists. a little too much Gibson for my taste, but yeah, it's a movie. All right,
then the one where he's underground, Sanctum, or the
Sanctum, hardly knew
the, the cave.
He is in the cave. Yes,
there Sanctum, it is. That Sanctum, one. Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of this movie, we're getting to the inciting incident here where a motorcycle gang is challenging another motorcycle gang to a rousing race where they both race down the street and then race on top of cars. But Jackie Chan doesn't want his uncle's car or his very nice, like, old classic Rolls or whatever to get, like, messed up. So he hops in front of it in his one-piece costume that he has here, his pajamas, which I was obsessed with also, because I'm like, how does that work? I've never seen something like that before. Anyway.
You know what?
Uh-huh.
We need a double feature of commentary, paparazzi and domestic disturbance.
Yeah. I really thought you were going to say something that mattered. Domestic disturbance.
Those are two movies that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd have a good time.
We need some Streets of Fire people in here.
This really looks like the set of a music, like a song could break at any second here. We either have
it's, you know, slightly desaturated Batman Forever just by default.
Yeah, there's no neon, but it pretty much is Batman Forever. Batman and Robin, right? The motorcycle racing. This is
I was thinking of the Dick Steals the Batmobile thing.
Yeah, this is our introduction to Francois Yip's character. One of the requirements for her in this movie were to speak Chinese, dance, and know how to do motorcycle. She lied and said she could do all those things when she, in fact, couldn't do any of those things. But learned for the movie because she got hired. And it paid off. Brandon, by chance, or even Mark, by chance, do you know who she would go on to play in another major franchise?
Francis Yip?
Yes.
Not off the top of my head.
She's Miss Yutani, of course, in the Alien versus Predator films.
Oh my gosh.
At the end of the Requiem, and then she comes back for the Predator, I believe, as well. She's Miss Yutani.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I haven't watched AVPR in a while.
I feel like I knew that and then forgot it and then read it today. I'm like, oh yeah, that seems like that makes sense.
That seems like knowledge I need to know. So
it's good knowledge to have, I think. Who plays Miss Yutani? We know Wayland. Now we have our Yutani side of things.
I hope the lady won.
There's just something about Jackie jumping down in his like little pajamas like that, where he's like protecting the car, that it just sticks out.
Even as my introduction to this, you know, to him, mm-hmm. you know, it was very obvious that this was a very different kind of action star. That it was foolish, you know, slapsticky, foolish, and you know, if I didn't have the quote unquote vocabulary for it yet, but you know, even in my limited awareness of Bruce Lee, which is, you know, I watched Enter the Dragon once or twice, you know, this was very much a contrast to that. It was very, you know, gee whiz underdog, willing to be look silly and willing to be made a fool. And whether compared to Bruce Lee or frankly compared to most action stars of that era off the top of my head, he certainly stood out, you know, even in the mid-90s at this point. You know, we were just getting to the point where we were starting to see quote unquote normal, you know, regular actors trying their hand at action movies.
Yes, Nick Cage.
Christian Slater.
Yeah, this was.
Cruise had his first kind of big action role in Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Well,
but this was all before that. I mean, because even in America, this comes out 6 months, 5 months before Mission Impossible and, you know, 6 months before The Rock.
Well, as far as these stars go, because you have Jackie, then you also have Jet Li and Donnie Yen at the same time, like as like as contemporaries for him.
Jackie hits, and everybody's like, "Oh no, you need to check out Jet Li. He's even better." And he just did not have the, like, I don't know, he didn't work it. He wasn't charisma wasn't there in United States films.
United States films for sure.
He got his fair share of American starring vehicles.
He does.
No, he did, but he didn't have success like Jackie did. And
yeah.
become a beloved star here
in this, in the same kind of way. Yeah. But in terms of like the kinds of films they're making, like Sky, you're absolutely right. Like Jackie is, he does stand out where Lee especially is doing more like martial arts epics and like wuxia films and things like that. Before coming over here, and he gets involved more in like the wire work game and stuff at that kind of period, along with, you know, being obviously physically capable or whatnot. And Donnie Yen is just such a technical master for the kind of films he's doing, whether it's like Iron Monkey or what have you. Chan, who already, you know, has multiple decades of work behind him between the Police Story franchise and the
Armor of God?
Armor of God franchise. Like, you know, all, just all the different, you know, the Meals on
Project
Meals on,
A.
Meals on Wheels, Project A2, like, yeah, all that stuff. I'm just sorry, the uncle and the these costumes.
Those shirts.
But Jackie's difference, I mean, it remains the same, right? He allows himself to look foolish, but more importantly, his fights are usually rooted in other people are attacking me, I'm trying to defend myself and get away from them. Bruce Lee, if you want to go back that far, is, I'm the fucking coolest guy in the room, don't mess with me, there's a tournament, or there's some guy being a dick, whatever, I can take him on. Jet Li is, yeah, I'm a righteous hero cry, I'm gonna go, you know, take on people. Jackie Chan is, I'm a good guy, but, like, I don't want to do any of this. Like, leave me alone, please. Like, I'm just gonna fight my way out of the situation.
Jackie Singh is playing defense when the others are more on the offense.
Yeah. Like, Police Story, because he's a cop by nature of his character, yes, he'll, like, take on certain things. But even then, like, that's only, like, the first one. It's, like, all the other Police Stories, it's like mainly him putting his back against the wall when he has to, like, really challenge himself.
Yeah, even so, I mean, he's been doing films of, you know, obviously he's been around for, what, 40 years, give or take, and it always feels weird when I see him, like, being assertive in an action sense, like the first one to pick up a gun or even firing a machine gun, even if it's, you know, logical within the sense of the story, it takes me a minute to readjust.
It isn't until like the mid 80s where they where he like really figures out where his bread and butter is, because there's a lot of like, well, let's try him like that. They try him like a Bruce Lee, they try him like a cool type guy, and it's when they figure out like the comedy stuff kind of works with it, because he works with the director of Enter the Dragon, trying to have his own jump off, and he does those more traditional period piece martial arts films
and wuxia stuff and early, yeah,
and that's like some of the most uninteresting stuff to go through in his catalog.
I feel like it was Skip Trace when he put it all together.
Okay. But yeah, you're right. And then like, he even does come to America. He's in Cannonball Run, but like, it doesn't go anywhere for him, right? He doesn't, and it, like, they're not
right.
The respect that he, you know, the way he's used to doing, you know, filming stunts or whatnot is not handled the same way at all in America. He doesn't take off. So he goes back to China and Hong Kong. Yeah. He and his, there's the trio, right? The, with him and, Sammo Hung
the third one.
Raymond Chow.
Yes.
Raymond Chow. No, Yuen Bao. There we go. I'm trying to find my nice.
Because they had the Lucky Stars trilogy and then the Dragon Forever.
Here it goes.
Here we
go. Because I was just watching things happen. This scene does introduce my favorite character in this movie, Angelo, of course.
this is the trailer moment.
Yep, this was a great trailer moment.
Breaks his nose.
And the thing with Jackie Chan, always great at incorporating his environment and props into the fight in a way like I don't know many others do very well, or to the degree of effectiveness. It kind of like well rounds it, makes like the... makes a setting a character of its own in every fight.
It's tough to make it seem organic, too, because after all these movies, it's like, I'm just going to grab this mop and like use it. Like, no, but this works out well.
I'm going to jump through this chair, then fold it up, then hit you with it, then sit back down on it.
I wonder how many people got hurt trying to recreate this jacket thing. Like, you got a knife? Give me a second.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, are we counting with or without using a knife? Yeah. I imagine that would make a bit of a difference.
This is the first scene where I realize how much overdubbing there is going on in this movie, because it incorporates more than just like a couple characters, specifically characters that aren't, you know, of Asian descent of some kind. Because it's like now there's like random white black people here, and I'm like, okay, they're all the way they're talking is like that doesn't seem to match what they're saying.
It did take me some getting used to though in '96 of the vibe of what he was going for, since I wasn't familiar with him, just like the over the top, like acting. I wasn't expecting that. So definitely, but like once I, you know, like once I figured it out, I had a great time with it. Cause I think at the time I was used to, like, I know Broken Arrow hadn't come out yet, but that kind of era of like Bad Boys and Desperado. And then you get this movie where he's just really amiable and like the goons are over the top. And it's still a lot of fun, but it just took me a while to wrap my head around.
See, weirdly, it all fits in like a similar category for me, because they're all over the top between Broken Arrow,
that's fair,
or Bad Boys, or the Rut. Like all of them are, they're maximalist. You know, they're all going for something that's very large. Like the more grounded ones, it's like, I don't know, like Crimson Tide or something, like whatever Tony Scott or Ridley Scott are up to at that point. Where meanwhile, like John Travolta's at an 11 in Broken Arrow,
just smoking the whole time.
Yeah, the banter between Martin and Will is off the chain in that movie, and then like this is just like that this nutso other kind of thing. Where yes, it's like an international film, so it's by default like different, I suppose, but it still has a similar kind of energy of, we're in heightened circumstances involving like what these villains are, what the action scenes lead to, and what have you.
Ooh, a protection fee.
There's those Vancouver prostitutes. Oh, jeez, just took that woman.
Me love you long time, eh?
Have we seen any of the mountains of the Bronx yet? Have we got any shots of those?
I was really disappointed when I went to New York.
You didn't see any mountains in the background. it was a challenge for Jackie to like bring the whole stunt team to Canada to make this movie. I know they had like a lot of fake graffiti they had to put up constantly at night, and then they had to take it all down before the mornings. Obviously, there was an effort to try to not show the many mountains of Vancouver, but they just kind of gave up on that after a while.
Yeah, they realized the action was important, not spending all the energy on like blocking graffiti.
Aaron,
yeah.
Common thing we do in these commentaries, who was up for this role before Jackie?
Christian Slater, Keanu Reeves, Kurt Russell.
At one point, Schwarzenegger or Stallone wrote a script for it, but that ended up becoming Daylight.
Yeah.
He wanted to keep things in the tunnels. And Jackie, there, you know, he's like, the script kind of calls for the big outside a lot. I don't know if this is going to work.
The motorcycle chases in his Daylight script did not work too well.
It's like, you want to have water and motorcycles? Like, what? I thought that one could work.
This is actually going to be a launch vehicle for David Cross.
I just saw the script for Chain Reaction. They got fucking hovercrafts over there. What do you want to do, a motorcycle?
You guys want some tires?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Mr. Show. Sorry. Want some mashed potatoes?
Yeah.
I like that this gang, it's like motocross bikes and this like dune buggy.
Listen, they would wipe me out, but I don't think I could take a dune buggy gang, an urban dune buggy gang, seriously.
No, I wouldn't either. This is what a couple more. I mean, and their second in command is Angelo. So, no, I would not take this group seriously at all. This has to be the only scene that is why the movie's R-rated, right? Like, I don't think like anything else really makes this an R-rated movie.
Yes and no in that. I mean, it doesn't feel as harsh because the tone is so heightened, but I mean, like, in terms of just nonstop mob, in terms of like nonstop crime chaos, this sometimes starts to feel like a Death Wish sequel in that middle portion. Again, I'm not saying some kind of hardcore or whatever, but rewatching it, especially the mix of gee whiz tone with either actually brutal violence or at least constant threats to do harm to random civilians. Yeah, I mean, it's again, it's a weird total mix, as a lot of Jackie Chan's pictures are here and there. I mean, there's one that's one of the Operation Condor movies, which is otherwise a gee whiz adventure, Indiana Jones, whatever. But it starts with this kidnapping of a princess or a pop star, which like a bunch of civilians and guards are just machine gun massacred in broad daylight in the opening scene.
Oh, the,
just something that's just,
the director's cut of, or the original cut of Mr. Nice Guy is far more violent and like it's much an R-rated movie compared to the PG-13 US cut.
This gang or whatever, they feel like if George Miller directed Class of Nukem High, what they come off as?
Random question.
I was saying this scene, but like this is the only scene that feels like it's very violent to me. Where like the rest of the movie has violence, but like this one seems like it's particularly harsh as far as why it has, why it has an R.
No, that's fair.
Like why it has an R rating? I think it could skate by without an R without this scene.
I'm getting a lot of like Luc Besson vibes here. Did he borrow from Asian cinema for his vibe?
He's a fan for sure. I've never heard him like specifically address his thoughts on like martial arts and like Hong Kong movies, but like between watching like Nikita and The Professional, especially, he does seem to have a very he seems like drawn to that world.
Yeah, everybody was into Jackie Chan was everywhere around like filmmakers and stuff. They were all pretty wild by him during the 80s and stuff. And I always love listening to what's his name? William Lustig. Yeah, he's talking about on the Maniac Cop movies. When they were doing Maniac Cop 2, they were like obsessed with Police Story, and they like put a stunt sequence in that movie as a tribute to a Police Story, where there's a part where Jackie Chan got handcuffed to, or he handcuffed someone to the steering wheel of a car, and he thought there was going to be a scene where like the person got dragged along with it, and since that didn't happen, they put one in the Maniac Cop 2, which is an awesome sequence, which I do recommend Maniac Cop 2. For a straight to video movie, that sure does go for it, and it's
fun. It delivers on the promise of Maniac Cop 1.
I've never watched a Maniac Cop movie.
Oh,
the Dark Knight of Maniac
the best
Cop movies.
Yeah, because you watch one thinking this cast surely this should be great, and it's like whatever.
But it's like
Guyver and Guyver 2.
It's like, oh my god.
It's like Guyver and Guyver 2, or Guyver 2 is just rad.
Yeah, basically. Exactly that example. I mean, yeah, you look at Besson's filmography and like, especially once he becomes like producer guy, where he writes an idea out on a napkin and hands it to one of his proteges, you get the Transporters and Kiss of the Dragon with Jet Li, the Taken films, and they all have like Hong Kong movie influence. Like they all feel like they're just right out of that area.
I love Kiss of the Dragon. That movie's gnarly.
Yeah, it is.
There's some good fights.
I've seen it only once, I think, but I just remember the trailer shot of he's like knocks a cue ball out of the pocket and kicks him in the face of it.
It's a grungy little thing. It's a lot grungier than I remember, but there's some awesome fights.
Is it Fonda in that one?
Yeah.
It's like one of her last movies, too, isn't it?
Man, that's a good choice.
Yeah, it is. Here. It's like literally, like, it's what. Yeah, it's like her last movie.
Wow. Wait, Jackie Brown? It was after Jackie Brown?
Yeah, it's 2001.
Yeah, Kiss Dragon's 2001, yeah.
Comes after Romeo Must Die?
Yeah, Romeo Must Die's 2000.
That your DMX broke out.
I had fun with all that. Like Chow Yun Fat came over and did The Replacement Killers.
Yep.
And I was excited. I don't know why, but I was excited for that. And then Jet Li came over and I was excited for that. Like it was a fun, I don't know. I enjoyed watching all these artists, actors come over and pop up in movies.
That import era.
Tony Jock came over after that.
Oh, man.
Or no, he didn't come over. I was starting to see that.
That blew my mind there in 2004. Like Protector and
Ong Bak, which rules, and then
the sequels are.
We're excited to hear that they're making two back to back sequels, and then we're like, what happened? He went crazy while making them. And yeah. then they and you find and but you're like, well, surely they still have to be good. Then you watch them, you're like, what happened here? what went wrong? And then he takes a very long break and then he reemerges like, oh, Tony Jaa's still around and he's still like kicking ass. So whatever.
And he's like, he shows up in movies like Detective Chinatown 3, where he's really funny, which in itself is hysterical.
Tony Jaa, I think, is a very talented actor. I think he knows how to be humorous and he knows how to play up drama. And no one can scream, "Where's my elephant?" like he does and make me care about that elephant.
That was my introduction.
Tell me I'm wrong. tell me you did not want him to get his elephant back.
I very much did. I felt
the Protector rocks.
Spoilers here. Are we gonna spoil the Protector?
That movie rules.
Ong Bak, my favorite thing is there's a whole period at the end where he's like fighting endless people and whatnot. He goes through all these stages and he finally gets to like the main bad guy. And he just shoots him in the shoulder. I'm like, fuck, what in like what? He put all the fighting.
Man, he's dirt bike riding.
Hates Jackie.
Whoa.
That must have cost them a lot of money because they're really going after Jackie for just like, you know, a bag of cash they didn't win in the motorcycle race.
I mean, you know, one guy gets over on him. They can't just let him do it.
Oh, my God.
You know, motorcycle henchmen are rarely successful.
Unless it's a side-scroller video game, because they will knock you down every single time, and you're like, God damn it, I can't get the fucking motorcycle guy.
The only one I can think of is Mile 22, which was an odd movie. Yeah, where I was like, oh, wait, did he just pull off a thing?
Yeah, usually they're just fodder, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's like, was it the
John Wick, the protect?
There's John Wick, the villainess. That's what I was trying to think of, the one that John Wick takes from, the villainess, yeah. That doesn't look simple. Like, get yourself rammed up very close against a wall. That seems like a stunt that took a little practice.
Yeah, that part where he jumped off the fence, then the wall, they get over it. The beginning of parkour right there. There you go.
That's what I started.
That's what it started.
Yep.
You guys are right, though. He's running from this. Like, he doesn't really want to fight.
He doesn't want to fight at all, no.
No, he just came to attend a wedding and hang out at the grocery store.
The also fun thing that is like, it's subtle, but like he usually wears light colors or white. So, you know, he's like, and all the other bad guys usually wear darker colors. So it's just like, it's very easy.
Like the visual shoe color thing.
The shoe color thing's a perfect example. Like in Police Story 2, there's a big fight in the playground where it's very specific, it's very noticeable that because it's a dark area and he's the only light person in the area and it stands out. It's just some fun visual shortcuts. At some point, he broke his ankle. I never remember when, but he did break his right ankle doing this movie.
Oh, the hovercraft bit.
Is it the hovercraft bit when he breaks? Yeah, because he has to wear like a big oversized sock that's painted to look like a shoe for like the majority of the movie. This building bit, the director Stanley Tong is the double for him here. Jackie's knees weren't exactly holding up too well for this to work out for him.
I love that when he and Tong reunited for Vanguard in 2020, they have a great jet ski action scene. Just putting it out there for everybody.
If Jackie's a white dude, do you think that guy tells on him?
No. If it's Christian Slater, no way.
The guy's like, oh, shoot.
Christian Slater? He's kind of rakish. I might tell on him.
Hey, you got to share.
Like, these guys are about to kill this man. that's their plan right
now. Yeah, they're
not holding back. Well, good thing those balls fell into the abandoned parking lot district.
You know, if this is made today, someone would say, those balls are too colorful.
I don't think that red car was meant to hit that, was it?
It stopped, you know.
Yeah. Man.
This is basically
biker gang with cardio. That's the worst.
You know, that guy with the duster, he's the leader.
Wow.
They're great on their bikes. We'll see if they can chase me on foot. Oh, no.
Classic Angelo. I'll just bring his ass out.
There it is. Oh, yeah.
Oh, geez.
I mean, if it'll stop.
Film contains nudity.
I do like this. It's so good. And they all laugh at him because it's classic.
Good Angela. Sound effect too.
Classic Angela.
Classic Angela.
Oh man, there it is. Oh,
that looks hard. Good thing the door was open. Jumping across buildings like that.
They all the bikers make the jump. Come on, who are these guys?
See, this guy's too angry. And he's a Canadian actor, so you know he's acting because it's not real. He would be angry. The thing is, if I'm chasing after some guy with a bunch of friends and they jump across the building, who's holding a grudge at that point? I'd be like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. I'm not even mad anymore. Like, that's amazing. Can he be in our gang? Can we invite him? Can we take him out to dinner later? Maybe give him some ice?
I like him.
He's great. This is where I have to be reminded what the plot of this movie is, where there's diamonds somewhere and they accidentally get robbed by Angelo and Angelo stashes them in the cripple kid's seat cushion. You mean
it's not Chandler's Gang, the movie?
What'd you say, Brandon?
Not Chan versus Gang, the movie?
It's not. No, it's not. That was step. That's just that's phase one. Now we're in phase two of the movie. So Scott, obviously, the peak point of Chan is going to come 7 or 8 years from now for you. But like, are you watching Chan movies and watching him get into American cinema, like just waiting for him to like give you something that just is like the best until it finally delivers? Like, are you excited when like Rush Hour comes out?
Yeah, in a skewed way. Because I mean, I enjoyed this one. Obviously, I saw Super Cop in theaters on opening weekend, First Strike as well. But even, you know, after First Strike, you're right. Mr. Nice Guy is also in theaters too, but by 1999, stuff like Who Am I is premiering exclusively on HBO.
Yeah.
So sort of like the air, you know, he gets one or two more. I think the last export to play as an American title in early 2000 or late 2000. Yeah, late 2000 is Legend of Dragon Master or Dragon Master 2, whichever. And I saw that one opening weekend and it was pretty much an empty theater. And that was sort of the end of that until, frankly, Vanguard because of, you know, COVID in November 2020. When it just, you know, theaters were desperate for anything. So that was one of the pictures that ends up opening kind of sort of wide for the first time since, you know, something like this. But, you know, even so, by the 2000s, Rush Hour 2, but he's also making, quote unquote, Hollywood movies like The Tuxedo and The Medallion, films of varying quality, Shanghai Noon. And I think Shanghai Noon was obviously the one that was sort of closest to genuine Jackie Chan for a number of reasons. It certainly feels less action-wise neutered than the Rush Hour pictures. And then, you know, one of the reasons I like Shanghai Nights as much as I did is it does feel like finally this is a Hollywood Jackie Chan film that feels uncompromised in a number of ways, both in terms of the quality and length of the action scenes, the terms of the melding of comedy with action, and just the fact that I fucking love the movie. And it's just, it's, you know, in other ways that, you know, I think even more so because the Hollywood movie, it's like, if this were in Hong Kong, would he let Donnie Yen kick his ass? I don't know. But in this film, he kicks his ass, and it's the movie's better for it. But, and then, you know, after Shanghai Nights, he doesn't do much of value to the point that I remember writing in a very old Mendelsohn's memo, that, you know, maybe he should have retired this kind of stuff after Shanghai Nights, because, you know, Forbidden Kingdom sure as shit isn't doing it for me. That's what it's called, right? Forbidden Kingdom, the
Jet
Hidden
Lee
Kingdom,
Jack,
the Jet Li combo team up.
I mean, that's coming a year after Rush Hour 3, which is, I assume, an amazing payday. Yes. Then, and Kung Fu Panda is the same year as Forbidden Kingdom, which, yes, yep. obviously it's voice work, and he's hardly in it for being a movie called Kung Fu Panda.
But, for what it's worth, I eat my words a couple years later when, even if The Spy Next Door is indeed very terrible, The Karate Kid is very good. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, that was worth it. And that really is, unless I'm missing one, it's sort of the end of his big Hollywood productions, because within a few years, he's sort of gone back to China, so to speak, and is making big, splashy Chinese movies that are making a shit ton of money in China.
Go back and to China, even though
some of them are directed by him. Skip Trace is a Rush Hour ripoff of Johnny Knoxville, directed by, I think, Rennie Harlan.
Rennie Harlan, my guy. It's fun.
And it's not good, but it certainly gets the, it got the job done in a number of ways. And, but even now, I mean, he hasn't really had a big, just in China hit since, I want to say, Shallow Kung Fu. Fuck, what's it called? I apologize. I need to look it up. It's sort of a mix of, it's sort of his version of trying to do a Bollywood type adventure, but not really.
Oh, that one. Yeah, I know what that one is.
I want to say it's like 2007, Kung Fu Yoga.
There it is. Yeah.
Which makes something like $200 million in China in 2017. Yeah. And that's sort of the end in terms of him being a big deal in China. Dude, to be fair, he's like 112 years old. He's been doing this for a while.
He's a national icon in China. Like, he's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That too.
Don't ask him about his politics. That's a little different story. But I mean, other than that, we don't need to talk about
Don't
that.
Ask him about anything not related to the movies.
I mean, you can talk to him about his singing.
Skip Trace pulled in $137 million.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money.
And he does this over, he does this period piece action fantasy with John Cusack and
Brody.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, Adrian Brody.
Dragon Blade. Like
$1 billion in 2015.
The Dragon Blade. Not for me. I know you're not really counting the voice work, but he is great as Splinter in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Like he's legit excellent as the role.
You're right.
Everybody showed up for that movie. That was so good.
I love the fact that among many things, he fucking kills people in that movie. Mm. I was not expecting that.
Don't mess with his kids.
Yeah.
I mean, Scott, you have like bodies buried people. Because of that same reason.
I'm sorry?
You've buried some bodies for that same reason.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't buy it.
Just compost them.
Yeah.
There's one of his that Aaron and I discovered a couple years ago that we really high on from a couple, 99, that Gorgeous.
Yeah, Gorgeous.
With Tony Leung. Yeah. I liked him. I know that's like a controversial opinion among, because it's not a fight heavy movie.
Because it's as much, if not more, a romantic comedy than it is an action film.
Yeah.
But like, for one thing, it's a good romantic comedy.
Yes.
But also the big fights with him and Bradley Allen, Brad Allen.
Yeah.
Are great.
Yeah.
They're like among his
that
best,
movie
like,
rules.
Yeah. I mean, like, you haven't seen fights that intense since his Project Eight with what's his name with Gross Mind Blank guy.
Benny the Jet, who fights in like
Jeremy Renner,
no wait, he's forever Jeremy and Meals Piven. On Wheels, like
yeah, those fights.
That used to be his final boss in like every movie.
Yeah,
in terms of fights, ironically, because again, it was the first of that era that didn't go to theaters. The final battle versus it's him and just two henchmen, and who am I? Is probably the best one-on-one or two-on-one, if you want to call it that, fight scene that I could, for me at least, in a modern Jackie Chan picture.
That's one I'm still waiting on a good Blu-ray to come out for.
Drunken Master 2 is like my pick for that. There's like a two battle, and it's like on hot coals.
It's Benny the Jet again.
No, you're probably right. When I meant modern, I mean it's like it's not a period piece.
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
And yeah, not.
Yeah, who am I? I keep waiting for that. So I've specifically not watched it because I want to like see a pristine. I just assume there's going to be one that comes eventually.
You are in for a treat.
Well, there's a weird.
No, I've seen Who Am I? I just haven't watched it since because I'm waiting for like a better version of it.
Yeah, there's like a weird cut of it in the U.S. that is people don't like, and which is probably what I saw before, but. That's been one. Like, there's also, yeah, there's also different, like, cuts and music. Like, Supercop has, like, a different cut with different music cues and stuff like that. And then I'd love, First Strike, there's a, our Lab. Version's way different. Mm-hmm. Which you can find the original cut on archive.org, but there's no, like, solid release for it.
Yeah. But that ladder fight.
The ladder fight, yeah.
I think this one. Has a 13 minute longer.
There's 17 version. Minutes deleted from this movie.
Forgive me.
I've never seen it. It establishes, for one thing, that Kyung is actually a cop. Like a key detail about why, like, he is as good as he is at doing things. It's the fact that he's a cop. Apparently his dad got shot by gang members. That's a subplot of this movie as well, which gives him, you know, some extra.
I guess they port that over to Rush Hour.
Being and that tiger was trying to get in there.
Oh yeah, being like 9 or 10, watching this movie for the first time, like it was always funny to me to see how like Jackie's just very cool with the fact that like he wants to like hang out with this girl who's basically a stripper, but the film's so like lighthearted about it that it doesn't really call that to mind. It's just like, yeah, you know, she's just an exotic dancer like anybody else. Like, it's a cool thing. It's apparently a very sex positive Jackie Chan movie.
It's like a dancer at one of the clubs in Austin Powers.
Sure. It's like a go-go dancer thing, except on the mean streets of the Bronx in Vancouver.
Yeah, I think Jackie Chan is only one of four actors to do the double and have a jet ski action scene and a snowmobile action scene. Next to Vin Diesel, Dwayne Johnson, Roger Moore, and Jackie. I just want to put that out there in the world.
Wow. All right. Like in the same movie?
No, just in general.
Because has Daniel Craig not been on a jet ski? I guess not.
No.
Isn't Quantum, doesn't there's sort of like water stuff that happens in that movie?
There's a boat.
He's just on a motorcycle.
He's on a little boat. Over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he takes a motorcycle out there.
That's right. Okay.
Listen, it's tough. It's like, you know, it's hard to be included in the group. I kind of gave it to Roger Moore because like riding that jet ski is just action, like an action scene enough, the one that he's on.
You ride it.
Yeah,
I dropped one tidbit tonight, so I had to do it.
His is like a little moped of a jet ski, Roger Moore's.
Yeah,
he jetted on some skis.
That's a good jump,
and that's really going to leave some dents on some motorcycles.
This is a tribute to Friday the 13th, Part 3.
Are they going to show up at the house later and there's going to be a mass killer?
Woof!
Oh, man, look what they did to our bikes.
To wrap up our conversation about Jackie Chan, his career real quick, we have Karate Kid Legends coming out. Scott, do you expect that to do business, like, just based on his name?
Honestly, I don't know.
Like, just I'm so curious about it.
Again, it's Sony, so I can't imagine it. It's going to cost so much that it has to do tentpole business to, you know, break even.
But certainly they're anticipating the idea that both Jackie Chan is a movie legend in this certain realm, and they've just had this hit Cobra Kai series. Surely if we combine the two things, yada, yada, yada.
But they've already had Daniel LaRusso back in action for years on
TV. But now
TV.
He's on the big screen special. With Jackie Chan.
And
who is not his Miyagi. Yeah.
No. And
that's the curiosity, though. You got to see, like, what? How does
it's
this
like
work?
It's like the smart thing of Rian Johnson, who said, I wanted to bring Obi-Wan Kenobi as a Force Ghost back for Luke, but I realized Ewan McGregor wasn't Mark Hamill's Obi-Wan, so that would bring kind of phony.
Yeah.
So I went with Yoda instead.
Well, and, like, you know, watching the Karate Kid remake, or whatever the hell it is now, in 2010, I had no assumption that it was in the same universe. I just thought it was a fucking remake. And, you know, not to get all grouchy about this, because there'll be time for that when it opens, unless it's, you know, shockingly good. It's like, you know, that was
hold
a
on.
Film.
Angelo's in disguise right now. as a wasp.
Was predicated on, you know, people that did not care about
the get out of his
film.
Chair. Stole his cushion. Okay, Scott, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I'll bitch about that later.
Windbreaker. attire.
Well, I mean, as far as that goes, like, I'm not inherently against this, mainly because who cares? I mean, it's a karate. What am I getting wrapped up in? It's not costing $200 million. It's not invading any space here. It's ideally for a certain, you know, kid group. What's the harm? Who's this hurting? that's where I'm at with this. Oh, that's why this is
my feeling,
because they throw bodies in a
you know, it's another case of a kid-friendly property that was twice popular because it was popular with children of that moment, that's now spawning this follow-up that's basically aimed at people our age.
But I think it's established that it's generational by having it appear in multiple decades at this point. So which is again why I don't really begrudge it, because it's not like they've reheated something from the 80s. They did, but like they did it with progression. They didn't just randomly take the Goonies and say, we're making a sequel to that. They said, hey, we did Karate Kid in the 80s. We made one in the 90s, regardless of how you feel about it. We did one in the 2000s, and we did a series in the 2010s. So it's like, okay, I can get behind that more than I can get behind other like random things that just come out.
We even tried it with a woman.
I forgot that there's a guy that gets ground up in a meat grinder, so that's why it's rated R. that's the other reason.
Yeah, Mad Max.
They don't show it, but still, it's pretty hardcore.
I mean, that's like a Mad Max ripoff, so it makes sense.
The guy they tossed in, the costumes they're wearing, everything. Yeah, I haven't mentioned Anita Mew at all. One of the heroic trio, of course, who is very much downplaying her abilities in this movie. Like, she's fun to watch, but she's certainly, you know, a classic kind of female character in a Jackie Chan movie. But I mean, she's certainly a star of her own. A huge, like, she's the goddaughter of Hong Kong or something. So she has some like nickname like that. And cause she's like a huge pop star and everything and did movies and whatnot. And then she sadly passed away in 2000. But I imagine for the Hong Kong audience watching this movie, she's certainly like a notable presence to have in here.
But as far career, I mean, even before Karate Kid, he was trying to sort of relaunch the Police Story franchise as a darker, grittier, more serious.
We tried it twice.
Tried a couple
they're
times.
Not good.
Yeah,
a couple
yeah,
times.
And none of them are good. So
I like New Police Story.
New Police Story is not bad. I mean, like, they're not Police Story 1 or Police Story 2 or Super Cop or First Strike.
No.
but after those.
That is correct.
After you knock those three off the table, sure. They're pretty good. Police Story 2013 is like the really gritty one, right? I believe.
Yeah, yeah. That's the really, really gritty
one. Really gritty one.
Yeah,
is that on the poster?
The other one's not too gritty. That's not gritty. It's just younger.
It's back to basic. You know, because I mean, the Police Story movies, they have especially the first two, they have a sense of humor, but they do balance it with police stuff, like drama, like actual drama. Mm-hmm. The second two are just Super Cop. I mean, is just fun. Like that movie, like the scope is expanded, so it's not the same as the first two ones, but it's still like
Super Cop is very obviously a movie made in a world where Die Hard and RoboCop and Lethal Weapon and Terminator 2 exist. So how do we play in that sandbox? And I think, to its credit, it successfully, you know, obviously it's not as big or as good as those, but it certainly doesn't embarrass itself in the attempt.
I'd argue it's pretty damn close to being as good as those, minus the, you know, James Cameron of it all or whatnot. Super Cop.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, it's
I never checked out Super Cop 2. Did you guys ever check out Super Cop 2?
Which is just Michelle. Well, he's like Michelle in it briefly, but it's more Michelle Yeoh.
I never checked that one out.
I haven't seen it, though. I assume it's also very dangerous because Michelle Yeoh also is willing to throw herself into crazy situations just like Jackie Chan is. here's the fight, and this is where like the Foot Clan stays when these guys aren't around.
Yeah, Sim Rockwell's already taken off.
Rockwell's there. Yeah, he's like, this is the day shift for the Foot Clan.
They're going to work their way over to the half pipes. Dude, the Shredder had the coolest... I get it, kid. I get why the kids went for the Shredder.
Yeah, of course.
place was awesome.
It was liquid peer pressure, and they drank it up.
You hang out with a rat down in the sewer that smells like ass, and like Shredder ordered pizza too, guys.
Yeah, Danny just got lucky to get sage wisdom at the right time. Everybody else is like, "What?" Like Sam Rockwell was giving me cigarettes, and I could go in a half pipe while listening to Partners in Crime.
So many great trailer moments.
Oh my god! Yeah, that shopping cart. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I'd still be in that.
I like this. I don't want to use bottles. I'm going to crack as many of them as I can so you can't use the bottles on me. Ugh. Nothing to mess up the pinball machine.
Just timing, comedy, just, you know, going against the grain. Like, it's all just seamlessly in every little moment again and again and again.
Like, the editing is so key, too. Like, I mean, I don't know how you plan this the way you, like, you rehearse it, obviously, but, like, the way you have to, you know, figure out camera angles, edit choices.
He's got to be somewhat of an in-camera director.
Oh, he's got it. I mean, he's been directing for, like, 10 years at this point, right? So, I mean, he's got to have just an understanding of how this stuff works. But just the idea of, you know, storyboard. I don't even know if you storyboard something like this. You just, like, you're figuring it out.
Isn't that what they do on the day? They talked about that. They just kind of show up and they figure it out on the day. Not too many storyboards.
Yeah, because that'd be take forever to kind of like storyboard something like this.
I mean, they can do that because they've been doing it for so long. Like, they probably didn't start doing that. Like, these guys just know what they're doing now.
Well, they put the cares less on, like, you know, epic lighting, things like that. They're like, all right, we just need something that's going to work. And you can see everything and we can move the camera quickly.
I love that the end of this plot of Jackie versus the gangs is fairly civil, right? Like, they have a big old fight just to, like, let off a lot of steam, basically, and then Jack is just, like, you know, browbeating them with wisdom. why can't we just get along?
I hope so. We'll be drinking tea together.
It's such a nice notion, and he means it. Like, he doesn't want to fight anybody. Like, I assume he just sees them as, like, you know, no good kids that just don't know any better. So he's just like, I don't want to murder any of you.
Because I'm, that kid out of the wheelchair and tried to assault a woman in the streets. You battered me up.
And they also buy it, right? They're all like, you know what? He's right. Like, they just agree. Like, that has to be the main skeleton of this thing. It's like, well, that's an hour of movie. We still need something else. Diamonds? I don't like whatever else. Let's
throw that. I do like that the people puke when they open up the bags with the dead
body. Yeah, because there's a body in there.
Hey, what's in there?
Why'd you bring the bag?
Was that Carl?
It's Lance.
This is a costume choice right here. Look at this guy. Greased up hair, blue shirt with yellow stripes, then just bright red pants.
I want to see Mark Dacascos, his character from Only the Strong, coming in and teaching these bikers how to do capoeira. Then he turns them into another gang.
That's the next step of this, right? Yeah, they all,
and then they fight on his behalf.
They move to LA and learn capoeira.
Oh no, Angelo.
These big white guys are, like, in a lot of Jackie Chan's movies also. As, like, big white guy that gets beat up by Jackie Chan at some point. Oh no, he shot Angelo.
A lot of nose strikes.
Yeah, Angelo really takes a face beating in this movie. This was a huge hit in Hong Kong. This movie came out. The biggest for a while.
Oh, wow. It was the top grossing movie of South Korea that year.
There you go. It was nominated for 8 Hong Kong Film Awards, but only won Best Canadian Action Tuxedo Choreography.
Tribute. Tribute to where they're filming.
If only he had, like, a denim button-up shirt for the triple.
So I think there's a part coming up that me and my friends used to poke fun at.
I
Apparently Summer Snow was the big hit at the Hong Kong Film Awards this year. Is it knocked out? Checking all the categories.
That guy in the ponytail.
This guy with the giant ponytail. Like, it's so much ponytail, too, right? Like, it's not a mullet, but it's still, but it's like
that
a
hair
really,
does
like,
not work on you, man.
It's a real like, shaggy mullet, pull ponytail.
That thing goes longer than you think.
Uh-huh.
How old was the actor that voiced the kid?
74.
Oh, that was Tara Strong.
I found the 96. Lifetime Achievement Awards for the MTV Movie Awards. So here's what we had. Jason Voorhees was the inaugural winner.
Which I thought was the funniest fucking thing when I was a kid.
Didn't like John Lovitz voice him? Was that what it is? The Three Stooges won the following year. John Shaft.
Oh, here you go.
Won 94.
I'm okay. He's always dying. Laughing and be like, what's that? I'm okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Jackie Chan, 95. Godzilla wins in 96.
Yeah.
Honored. Chewbacca, 97. And yeah, then Clint Howard, 98. Stops.
97, because they picked the Star Wars Special Editions.
Special
were
Editions
hot
coming
on.
Out, yeah. They kind of come back with the Generation Award. So that's when Tom Cruise wins, then Jim Carrey wins, Mike Myers wins, Adam Sandler wins.
Maggie Q. The proteges.
Yeah.
So that's basically, it's just people you expect to win at this point. It's just a lot of like people that are popular.
Are diamonds as big? I feel like diamonds were everywhere in the 90s.
Huge commodity. Still,
that and bearer bonds.
Bearer bonds?
Yeah.
Gold. Gold was always popular.
Yeah, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Everybody loves untraceable bearer bonds.
Are diamonds?
You know why? Because
still...
they're untraceable.
Are diamonds still a thing?
Is can't find out where those came from.
Are diamonds still a thing? Is that you're asking?
Yeah, in movies.
Well, Mark, diamonds aren't forever.
Bitcoin now.
Yeah, that's true. What's the movie with the diamond? No. Wait, Striking Rescue? Does that have a diamond?
That we just watched?
Yeah. There's an orange diamond in a movie.
It has like jewels in it. Yeah. Yeah, it does for sure.
You know, 96 was a funky year for action. It was such like a really changing of the guard, though. Like, you're right, The Rock with Nick Cage. The Long Kiss Goodnight was awesome, but it didn't do too well. Like Mission Impossible, Tom Cruise got huge. First Strike, this. But like Russell had Escape from LA and Executive Decision. Eraser didn't do too well. Daylight didn't do too well. Chain Reaction didn't do too well. Then Broken Arrow took off. It was just an interesting year for action cinema.
Well, we were still at a point where these films like that were, give or take a few, very few huge fucking movies like Independence Day or Twister. Movies like Mission Impossible or The Rock were still the cream of the crop in terms of would-be tentpoles.
Yeah.
We were still in a point where quote-unquote grounded, non-fantastical action-adventure movies were still considered the A-plus Hollywood genre.
The top 10 is really well balanced for 96. This is insane. Independence Day, Twister, Mission Impossible, Jerry Maguire, Ransom, 101 Dalmatians, The Rock, Nutty Professor, Birdcage, A Time to Kill. That is as eclectic as you can get for a box office lineup.
Yeah.
Is there even a sequel in there? No, right? There's just like one remake. Well, two remakes, I guess. Okay. and a TV adaptation. That's nuts.
Yeah. I actually saw Nutty Professor and Super Cop in a double feature.
There you go.
Anyone want to guess what I saw as a double feature with Rumble in the Bronx?
It's January.
Mm-hmm.
Senior Trip.
Give me a hint.
What was that?
He said Senior Trip. Don't worry about it. It's dumb.
Oh, no. Not Senior Trip.
Give me a hint. Give me a hint.
January
96. Is the comedy. It
was Celtic Pride.
No, it was. Let me put it this way. I did not make my uncle sit through this one. He's probably very grateful for that. Wild he probably things. Would have liked Celtic Pride. He was into basketball. He's still alive.
Is it
sorry, what was that?
Is it a comedy?
No.
Is it an action movie?
Nope.
Jade.
Jade. Tim Burton was supposed to direct it, but he did not.
January.
Tim Burton. Frighteners?
No.
Nope. That's August. That's August. 26.
Yeah, it's a summer movie. January. Tim Burton's supposed to direct this, but doesn't.
Technically February.
Okay. What is it, a drama?
Yes, sort of.
Okay, sort of.
It was an infamous box office bomb directed by Stephen Frears.
Frears? Oh, Mary Reilly.
I said yes. Mary Reilly.
Well, you whispered I didn't hear you.
Yeah, I said.
I'm not watching you. I'm trying to figure this out.
Nobody said anything.
You got to whisper it louder.
Listeners heard me. They're like, Brandon said it. You know, we were talking about like all these action hit, like Broken Arrow. That's a weird circumstance where like they went and saw because like the guy playing the villain in it, right? That's mm-hmm. that was a lot of the appeal, like because there was this
cool
thing with Travolta's career resurgence because he played a bad guy in Pulp Fiction, but like in the context of what the movie's about, no, like not really.
Oh, I don't They're think anyone viewed bad. Him as a villain in Pulp Fiction.
What?
And I think with Broken Arrow, you know, it was neat thing. Oh, John Travolta's going to play this larger than life supervillain character.
Yeah. I think the idea is just he's playing cool characters. Like he's cool in Pulp Fiction. He's cool in Get Shorty. Like
he is, but they stressed like, oh, he's playing a bad person in Pulp Fiction. Like when that came, that was against his type. He's not the hero. He's not. It's just like
I think it was just against him type to be in a Hollywood movie at that point.
I liked the
but
way.
Then
he
it became like watch Travolta
roles.
Play a bad guy. Yeah. That was like every, you know,
fair enough.
Big release he did, and that was based off Pulp Fiction,
which culminated in the best of those all those films, Swordfish, of course.
It's like. Yeah, in Broken Arrow, he has like this weird V thing where he smokes. And then in Face Off, he looks like he's playing darts when he's smoking cigarettes.
He's making choices.
And then in Swordfish, he kind of does this weird hand thing with his cigarettes. So like he's, and then in Punisher,
he does the
like,
Telly Savalas and On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Like you don't hold it like that.
That's the thing.
No one does.
Like, as ridiculous as his career gets, I never feel like, except for some of those Disney ones like Old Dogs, I never feel like Travolta's really phoning it in. Like, the family ones,
I mean,
kind
even
of
in the Punisher, he's giving a real performance.
Yes, which is why I like him in the Punisher because it's such a like weird put upon character. Him in the Punisher is like Pierce Brosnan in the Foreigner. Speaking of Jackie Chan movies, where it's like the side story going on with the main villain is kind of just as interesting as the hero story because you're like, oh, this guy is going through so many problems at home. Like, how's he get out of this one?
Well, that's one of the reasons. I mean, I do very much enjoy the Foreigner. It's sort of like you got this political thriller in my revenge saga.
Yeah,
you got this revenge saga in my political thriller. And it's funny because, you know, and it doesn't matter, but when you're watching the Foreigner, he finally takes his quote unquote revenge, but like he almost causes the terrorist plot to actually work because he interfered in the way that he did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously they save the day in the end, but
hey, guess who directed that movie?
The director of the
Why do you think I saw it?
Martin Campbell.
Protege Campbell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Memory himself. The cleaner.
He was pushed to his vertical limit. That's Campbell, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, we did Zorro, a commentary for that.
We've done a number of Campbells at this point, yes.
Green Lantern.
Did Cedric the Entertainer cameo in The Cleaner at all, or...?
No,
this place is dirty.
Yeah, they didn't pull off a XXX3 where they could bring back a legacy character like Cedric the Entertainer for the Cleaner.
Gotcha.
Rennie Harlan did it.
God's doing the math right now. Ice Cube appears in XXX, and Cedric's not. It's codenamed the Cleaner.
So yeah, now he's hooked up with the authorities, and he's wired.
What is your guys' favorite of this like 90s imported run?
Super
Cop. It's like this, Super Cop, Operation Condor, First Strike, Drunken Master, The Legend of Drunken Master.
Who am I? I probably hold on to this one real tight because it was the one that opened my, but Super Cop.
Yeah.
I probably think is, that's the one that like affirmed like how awesome this guy is.
It's definitely Super Cop for me, but like I think I've watched this one the most. It's also the leanest. Like it's, you know, it's 80 minutes. Like it's not a hard movie to put on and like
enjoy. Right. And it's a standalone with
It's its own thing. Yeah.
Yeah, its own thing.
And this is where they gave up with the mountains.
When they did Twin Drag.
Yeah.
Hello there. What? Oh, I'm just golfing now. They put Twin Dragons out during this run too, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yes.
That one's not bad. I like that one. Kind of. Mr. Nice Guy is cool too. You mentioned that one.
I like Mr. Nice Guy because it has a giant tractor. Like I've never seen a movie that uses a giant tractor like that. Because it's just like it's such an impossibly large vehicle to me. So the idea of Jackie Chan being like, what if we did something with one of these? Like, it's just very. I like the idea of making that movie more than I like the movie itself. But it's like it's fun.
I remember my birthday one year when First Strike came out. Like we had a snow day at school. Like they canceled school because of snow. And my mom's like, "Well, what do you want to do today? Your birthday? School got canceled." I'm like, "I want to go see First Strike." So I want to do.
Great snowmobile and action.
Drug her there, and she like, I could tell she was enjoying herself. She was laughing all this shit, and then the end. No, that was kind of dumb. I'm like, you were fucking reacting like crazy to this movie. You had a good time. Shut up.
When did First Strike hit America? It's got to be 97, right?
January. It had to be a January.
It was January 97. That
was my birthday yeah.
Yeah, that's a that is. I mean, that had everything going. That's like the most Bondy of the police stories.
Yeah.
So because it's globetrotting, because it starts off with snow and it ends in Australia and has shark fights. Well, it has a fight. It has a fight in the shark thing.
Which a little bit of everything, Aaron. A little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything.
I think that's why I like it. Snowmobiles, sharks.
No, I like First Strike a lot. Like that's when I was younger. I watched that one a lot. This and First Strike are the ones I watched the most when I was younger. But yeah, every time I watch Super Cop now, I'm like, Michelle Yeoh could have died so many times in this movie. It's nuts.
The dangers, like the driving the motorcycle up on top of those
trains. Yeah. Like the helicopter blades doing stuff over there.
It's skipping slightly ahead on this one. You know, obviously we're going to see the outtakes at the end. And the one that always, quote unquote, got to me was when he basically almost gets decapitated by the pinball machine.
Oh, yeah.
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 Like, how did he not die from that? Jesus.
His movement is so distinct. Like, I know Jackie draws a lot from like Buster Keaton and other influences, but you just know it's him running on screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Much like Cruise and Robert Patrick, they have like runs. They have signature runs.
I love Uzis. Just
terrible undercover agent.
All right, now they're going into the what I assume
is what a hovercraft.
The big lake of the Bronx over here.
The Bronx Lake.
The Bronx, you can see the Yankees and you can see hovercrafts. You can do
the only thing. I went around the Statue of Liberty one time in a hovercraft.
It must be the East River. Over there. Where is it supposed to be?
I think they're right though. This movie works best when it's like we don't care. Just let's not even try. We're here for the tax incentives.
Okay. Let's see. I'm trying to find best action sequence for the MTV Movie Awards and what this lost to.
There it is.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. It did not get nominated for Best Actress. Hold on.
Skiing.
Oh, best fight, not action sequence. Best scenario, best fight. What if I get the wrong thing? Okay. 1996 MTV Movie Awards. Best Fight nominees: John Travolta versus Christian Slater in Broken Arrow. Okay. Pierce Brosnan versus Famke Janssen in GoldenEye.
Yep.
Jackie Chan versus bad guys in Rumble in the Bronx. I believe it is the big like Foot Clan hideout scene.
The big warehouse fight.
Big, yeah. The winner: Adam Sandler versus Bob Barker, Happy Gilmore.
That's fair.
They went that way.
The beginning of the end.
The votes count. That was the first year of Best Fight.
Oh, okay.
Year after that, Jackie Chan versus Henchman and Jackie Chan's First Strike. Pamela Anderson Lee versus bad guy in Barbed Wire. Jim Brown versus Martian in Mars Attacks. That's an inspired choice. That's really good. I really like that. That's really fun. Matthew Broderick versus Jim Carrey and the Cable Guy. But of course, the winner.
Was it Medieval Times?
I would assume Jim Carrey wins.
Okay.
I would assume that. But the winner, of course, was Fairuza Balk versus Robin Tunney in The Craft.
Well, that's a good one. Random. Outside the box. Well, it's outside the box, at least. Blows?
They have a fight.
Violent. The end of that movie is dark.
Now, if a hovercraft is coming at you, I guess this is a rag reaction. We missed that whole him surfing on denim and nothing basically in the water. Right. But that's pretty. That seems like a rough couple of hours for Jackie as well to do that.
It really does zip by. I do remember in the 90s, it was Will Smith, Jim Carrey, and Adam Sandler making runs on everything at the awards.
Constantly.
Ernie!
Jim Carrey was beating himself because he was in multiple movies. He was winning against himself in those years.
Right.
I remember when Quentin Tarantino won, he's like, they're always losing to Forrest Gump. I remember him. He made that speech.
Okay, so now he's going to toss a small child and then gets run over by a hovercraft. Yeah. And then you're like, what's under a hovercraft?
Yeah, like, how does that work? You really survive that?
We just saw it happen.
Did do that?
I feel like we just saw that happen, right?
And his clothes are mostly intact. Some guy won't be so lucky.
He was on sand, so I mean, I can understand the logic of how that works. Because we're going to see the results of it later on with the other. Again, yes, it's, you know, a movie, but still. Like,
these guys, endgame, they're not, they haven't thought this through.
That looks dangerous.
Nope.
That bus.
Like Keanu's in it driving by.
It's the other bus. That's the 5049.
Oh, man.
This is a year after GoldenEye when they just marched a tank through town, too. So, like, yeah, let's get a hovercraft. Let's see where that goes.
Hovercraft cheaper.
But I am, like, just sitting here the whole time thinking, what's underneath that? What goes on underneath those hovercrafts?
What is the inner workings of this hovercraft? Mm-hmm. And don't tell me air.
Yeah. It's like when a starfish is stuck to something. It's like, what's going on under there? It's like, oh, it's got a weird mouth of a bunch of teeth and all kinds of things. You don't really know anything about it. But still, it's interesting.
Are you okay?
No.
That was in the trailer, too.
Yeah, that's good. I think this is the last time Stanley Tong directs a Jackie Chan movie up until Vanguard, if I'm not mistaken.
This random Lamborghini.
Yeah. Ruins the paint job.
Yep.
I mean, they are putting it over stuff, so like it is doing some. I mean, I know it didn't just do that, but I mean, it is like affecting the world in some way.
It's just like a bellhop.
Maybe he stole it.
He was valet. He's it's the Ferris Bueller. It's the Ferris Bueller guys.
Hovercraft. What? Like Marty McFly? No.
Hovercraft.
What would you do if you're in a punk concert? It's like a hovercraft. What?
It's really punk.
I would be tired if I wrote that line, I think. Just uh-oh.
They're still playing.
Hovercraft.
Hardcore. Jackie Chan's 41 in this movie, by the way.
Wow. Oh, geez.
Oh, he ruins that Lamborghini.
Oh, my gosh.
Hope that was a one-taker. Yeah. He demolishes the doors like that.
Is he going to the Meg this thing?
Yeah. He went to your local medieval time shop to get the large sword. Then he's going to do this. That is a pretty sweet move. Like, that's a... Sure, he caused so much more damage by doing that, but still.
But they got stopped.
I like how he has the upper hand now, too. He's like, good, I stopped the hovercraft. Let me get inside here. He just shot a guy.
Ooh.
Just
vicious.
What I like here now is, so they've rescued the hostages. Their plan is, okay, we have to go arrest the big rich white man. So what are we going to do? Well, let's fix up the hovercraft, obviously. Yep. Step one, fix hovercraft. Step two.
In about 5 minutes.
Find out where the rich is. Yeah, get all that emergency FBI tape that we have lying around. Fix the hovercraft. And then we're going to go find the rich white man who's behind all of this. And we're going to go attack him directly using the hovercraft.
Come on, gang leader. Let's do this. We'll have that tea.
Couldn't we take like a helicopter, just land in front of him on the golf course? The hovercraft plan is way better. That's the way I got to go with.
I mean, you never see it coming.
You never see a large and presumably very loud hovercraft coming, correct?
On the East River. On the East River? Is that what it is?
Yeah, well, no, now they're on the Hudson.
Okay.
And duct tape just fits.
This is the other side of town, either. Mark. This is where the rich people live. Yeah. This is Manhattan.
Oh, tape. So much tape.
So much tape.
You can't duck it. Oh no.
I like now the hovercraft's like a movie monster. Like it's eating people.
It's a skeleton.
Guy got thrown into the tree.
I like how they also brought everyone with them. Like, okay, let's have all my friends in the hovercraft plan.
None of the police come.
Nope.
I like how
they probably want plausible deniability on this one.
It rips all of the guy's clothes off, which is fun. Also,
and that could have been murder.
Freeze frame.
And I like that. That's the end. In the end, that's the movie.
Oof.
In the I know in the Hong Kong cut, as with many movies, Jackie Chan sings during the credits here, but they replaced it with this kick-ass Ash song instead, which I really like, which will definitely be on this podcast. It's the idea that, like, he has to do all this, then it fails. Oh, my God.
Boom. Ouch.
That's where it is, right? That's where he breaks his ankle.
Yep.
Yeah, that sucks. Like, these are supposed to be bloopers. It's like six more scenes of him being writhing in pain and being airlifted.
Carried off in a stretcher.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. He's crippled.
Oh, head first.
Yep, that hurt.
You look concussed there. Oh, man. Oh, man.
Oof.
I don't know if you want to be previewing this, you know? Oh, another person?
Please see our movie. We have lots of hospital bills to pay.
The body count rises.
That looked dangerous.
That's okay. Most of them are white guys anyway. They're expendable.
Oh, they got the shot. Here's the jump. Here's Jackie's jump.
Oh, man.
Most of those aren't Jack. There we go. Oh, here we go. Here's the big foot with the sock.
If this one's a blooper, it's going to be really awkward.
I still have the post-credit scenes with Francois Yip and is it a test, Mrs. Utani?
Yeah, she brings out a predator gun and gives it to her son. So the kid has the predator gun, and then mm-hmm. what's his name? Our finest actor, Wonder himself. He still has the mask.
Yep.
And together they combine forces.
And the and predator just
Bronx.
Keeps tossing.
They have to go to the Bronx to solve it all.
Keeps pulling the kid out of the chair.
Oh, here we go. Here's the shopping cart. And there's the pinball machine. Which oh my god,
got it. Yeah.
None of that's good.
Oh yeah, he's wearing a boot from busting his ankle.
Mm-hmm. That bus almost kills him.
Yeah, watch that. Kurt Russell broke his ankle for Soldier too.
Yeah. See, we're all having a good time. That's the message of these bloopers. Yep. we're all having fun.
Jackie Chan will return in.
It's all Super great, Cop. Right, folks? Jackie Chan will return in Super Cop. Well, the crazy thing with all these movies is like the Weinsteins bought them all up. So they wound up in some sort of home video hell for quite a while and just recently were having released of that stranglehold due to rights running out. But they were the ones putting them out.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to because like 1 through 3 for Police Story have finally gotten like great treatment. I'm still waiting to see First Strike ever get.
And yeah, First Strike,
but that's New Line. Like this, First Strike is New Line, or I don't know who has it now, but
yeah,
but that and this movie are both.
Yeah, this somewhere. One, and I have to say, like you know, there was a thing where somewhere in the late 80s and a lot in the 90s that you know. Film studios logos just kind of made you feel a certain way, and I was always eager to check out like New Line stuff in a weird way.
It's
they
turtles.
Would put out like a very interesting, took chances on you know if I was going to discover something new from a more major studio, it'd be like New Line.
It's because Turtles hypnotized us all when we were young, so we're just
yeah.
It's built into our system to want to see New Line anytime.
Freddy, yeah, that, and then
the
like
mask.
Dimension Films was like, oh, there's gonna be a horror movie coming.
Yeah, Dimension's just like so specific. Where you're like, well, yeah. Some people are gonna die in this one, no matter what.
Yeah,
you know, whatever. Scream, From Dusk Till Dawn, Bad Santa, something's gonna happen here. It's gonna be bad. Well, we've done it.
I'm driving too. Yeah,
we've talked about Rumble in the Bronx. One of Vancouver's finest. anything else on this movie? I don't know, my notes, I seem to have gone over everything I had here.
We should do Wheels on Meals sometime.
And I thought Gorgeous too, man. You guys talked me into that.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah, Wheels on Meals is on the list.
In the tuxedo, because why the hell not?
I have many reasons why not.
Tuxedo and the Medallion back to back.
Skip Trace.
Well, just watching. All right, we've done it. Talked about Rumble in the Bronx. That's gonna do it for this commentary track. Where can people find all of you guys online? Mark Hoffmeyer, let's start with you.
Yeah, Movie Sons of Flicks, the podcast, and then .com, and then Deep Blue Sea, the podcast.
Great, Brandon Peters.
The Brandon Peters Show is thebrandonpetersshow.com. About to start the summer of 2015 at 10 series. Looking very forward to that with Scott and Aaron for another wonderful summer. And in person, you can check me out at Days of the Dead, June 13th through 15th in Indianapolis, Indiana, and PopCon, both PopCon Summit, Creator Summit, and PopCon at the end of June. Those running from the 25th through the 29th, also in Indianapolis, Indiana.
John Mendelson.
I'm a semi-regular contributor at Puck News. I write, run, and maintain the Outside Scoop at Substack. And I run a weekly podcast called The Box Office Podcast, where it's myself and a handful of generally younger, cooler, more culturally relevant box office pundits and film scholars who discuss what happened next weekend, the previous weekend, at a theater near you.
Of course, can be found at thecodeofzeke.substack.com. Everything I do ends up over there. Along with this podcast, I also co-host Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla, a bi-weekly look at the various films of the Godzilla franchise handled in chronological order with my co-host and film critic, Terrence Johnson. And I'm on all the socials at Aaron's PS4. This podcast will be found everywhere you can find podcasts. Please give us an iTunes review and rating. That'd be helpful. Pop us up in the old iTunes charts. And we're on all the socials and all that. Brandon, Scott, Mark, thank you all very much for joining me for this Rumble in the Bronx commentary track.
Oh, honor. This is great.
Very welcome.
This is good. This is great.
Next month, we will be back to finish off the original Indiana Jones trilogy, The Last Crusade. So stay tuned. We'll see what happens with old Indy. But yeah, that's going to do it for this commentary. So until next time, so long
and goodbye.